going to channel my inner Ken Kaiser here and start with some questions. These are open for everyone, and I do want to hear your feedback. The first one is maybe a little bit of an odd one, but I'm just curious, as we think a little bit tonight about the book of Proverbs, what is your opinion on this book? And I know that sounds like a silly question. It's not a trick question. You know, it sounds like I'm putting you on the spot. What do you think about this book of the Bible? If I say anything, you know, that I sound skeptical or questioning about it, is that bad? But Proverbs, the reason I ask and the reason I'm curious in some of your feedback is because Proverbs, I think, does elicit maybe a little more opinion on it than certain other books, just because its content is somewhat unique. And people do seem to have either a very strong connection to it, in that they like it and seem to value it very much, or it's not that they don't like it, but just that they find it somewhat odd because of somewhat how different it is. So I'm just wondering, just generally speaking, as we approach Proverbs, what is your general opinion, I guess is the right word, about it? Go ahead. Yeah.
Pieces of wisdom that are often practical and needed.
Yep. Okay. I agree. Very good. Okay. Mr. Gregg?
Practical Christianity that often hurts.
Okay. Practical Christianity that often hurts. Okay. Hurts as in, I'm guessing probably what you mean by that is like convictionally, right? Like steps on your toes a little bit. Okay. 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 All right. Frank, I think you had your hand up.
I think it's timeless.
Yep.
It was woke before woke.
It was, say that again.
Woke before woke.
Woke before woke. Timeless. Okay. I don't know how Solomon would take that. All
right. Woke in the right place.
There you go. All right, anyone else? Okay, Ken?
I think sometimes there's a difference or promises.
Okay.
And I think sometimes people can be disillusioned of principle.
Okay. And the difference being a principle meaning something that is true generally speaking, a promise meaning something that is guaranteed to happen exactly the way it's said to happen. Okay? Yep, I agree. All right, anyone else? These are good. Okay, you'll see, I think, in a little bit, a little more of why I asked that, and the direction that some of you took it was the way I thought you would take it, so that actually is helpful. But before we do that, let me ask this, and for this, you can look this up if you would like. Otherwise, you can listen as I read. What do we know about this proverbial wisdom, particularly that Solomon had, before we get to the book? When you come to the very end of 1 Kings chapter 4, you read this, and this, by the way, the context in that chapter is that Solomon has just been made king. He has just come to the throne, and the beginning of his reign is full of promise and full of hope because of who Solomon is and what he what the Lord has given him. So it reads like this, 1 Kings 4:29. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed all the wisdom of the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all other men. Verse 32 says that Solomon spoke, how many proverbs? Either you can read it there, or if you know it by heart, how many? 3,000 proverbs. You know, whether or not we are to take that as like an exact round number or, you know, roughly, the point is the guy had these, as you said, nuggets of wisdom that he recorded. I'm not sure we even have all of them in the book. In fact, I'm rather certain we don't. So maybe it would be interesting to have lunch with Solomon one day. Surely there'll be Chick-fil-A in heaven, right? And you could sit down with Solomon and say, what are those other proverbs? And perhaps learn from him. He spoke 3,000 of them. And then verse 34 says that people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. So when we have an entire book full of these, full of this type of wisdom from this man who those even of the other nations came to seek his wisdom, we have something worth paying attention to. And that's what we have primarily in the book of Proverbs. And I do think, as I mentioned earlier, that there is, and even as was kind of given in some of your answers, there is a wide array of opinions about the book. Here are some of the reasons why I think people love the book. Proverbs has 31 chapters, and I know of many believers who have practiced or have at least recommended the practice of reading a proverb a day every month. How many of you have either done this at some point in time, maybe continually, or at least taken a month to do this? So, you know, today is the 16th. Proverbs 16, you know, if you just wanted to begin this habit, or at least try it out, you know, there's not necessarily 31 days in every month, but generally speaking, you could read through the book rather easily in a month and even kind of keep up with it, knowing just what day of the month that it is. And so people find that helpful. Someone mentioned the practicality of the book. And so some have said, well, I like Proverbs because it's not as theological, it's more practical. You know, there's not as much doctrine there, and I don't have to dig through the weeds of doctrine. It just tells me what to do. And so they like that about it. Now, I might dispute them a little bit. There's probably more theology there than some would think there to be on the surface. Because after all, what is that practicality grounded in? Truth and doctrine and things worth believing and knowing about. But it is a very straightforward book in most cases. It does have many memorable sayings. Again, you know, somebody mentioned, Pastor Carl mentioned these digestible nuggets. You know, many of which are rather easy to remember. It's one that probably you have, you may not memorize as many proverbs like in a row, like you might memorize a section from a narrative as easily, but you probably know many of these proverbs by heart as they are scattered throughout the book, simply because when you hear them, they tend to stick with you. And so some people appreciate that about the book, and the fact that it is just a book of general wisdom. So even if we think of what's in the book as maybe principles as opposed to promises in some cases, those principles still are helpful in the way that they guide our thinking and guide our living. And again, people seem to appreciate the wisdom in the book. So surely for those reasons, everybody thinks positively about Proverbs, right? Well, here are some reasons why, and I hesitate to say that you wouldn't love a book of the Bible, but maybe wouldn't think of it quite as highly. One reason is that the book can feel somewhat disorganized. It moves very quickly from one topic to another. Sometimes you'll have an entire long stretch of verses, and it just seems very random. You know, this verse stands on its own, and the next verse stands on its own, and the next verse stands on its own, and so on for a long stretch of time. And so, you know, am I just supposed to try to remember all these individual statements? Is there any connection to them at all? Sometimes it can feel disorganized. Some have said that Proverbs is difficult because, you know, where does it fit? It doesn't tell a story, and most of what's in it doesn't seem to fit with much of the rest of the storyline of the Bible. You know, it doesn't have the narrative. It doesn't have the action maybe that some other books do. So how do we align it with some of these other things that we read in Scripture? Some have even observed that certain statements in Proverbs either seem to be outright false or at least not guarantees. So again, that idea of principles versus promises. Let me give you an example of this. This is one that I suspect many of you probably do have memorized. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, if you took that as just a statement of something that is always true, it sounds like, parents, if we'll just point our kids in the right direction and train them that this is the way that they should walk in, they'll continue in it forever. And when you realize rather quickly that that's sadly not always the case, we wonder, is can we trust this book? What about the children who are trained in the right way and yet stray from it? Does that mean that we can't count on the things that are said here? Are these statements sometimes false? Or are some of these statements contradictory? Proverbs 26, starting in verse 4. Verse 4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him." Verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes." And you read those verses back to back and you think to yourself, what in the world am I supposed to do with a fool and his folly? Do I answer him or not? You know, how in the world do I know, you know, how does this make sense? Why would the writer give contradictory instructions in back-to-back statements? And so we begin to wonder, again, does this guy have any idea what he's talking about? So that would be one reason why people, again, aren't sure what to make of this book. The other question that some people would ask might be something like, is Solomon really somebody I should be taking advice from? And I heard this one time from a teacher that I enjoyed and benefited a lot from. But he came to the conclusion with Proverbs. He says, honestly, I don't know what to do with most of it. Because here's this guy who at the end of his life didn't live out any of these wisdom sayings that he promoted. His life was in total contrast to the kind of wisdom that he advocated for. I don't know that I want to listen to that guy, you know, who had all these wives and whose heart was turned away from the Lord because of it. And so do I really want to listen to this guy whose character is not really worth emulating in these examples? And so what do we do with that? Now, I think there are answers to those questions. You know, perhaps even as it relates to the last one, maybe thinking about and we'll talk about this even just in understanding what the book is and what it's for and how it's conveyed. Don't we all to some extent speak better than we live, you know, and advise others, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And that's of course not to excuse any of Solomon's actions or just put a blanket covering over, you know, those things don't matter. It only matters what he says. Of course, that's not the right approach either. But it's possible for someone to speak great wisdom and yet ignore his own wisdom, right? So, and so it's not that we also should just ignore what he says. Rather, we should listen to what he said, maybe better than he did in those cases. As far as the contradictory statements, do we answer a fool according to his folly, or do we not answer a fool according to his folly? What's the answer? It depends, right? And that's the point of each of those verses. We don't want to be like a fool, and if answering a fool according to his folly would make us just as foolish, don't do it. But if a fool can be taught wisdom and is willing to be corrected, answer that fool according to his folly, so that his wisdom is actually wisdom and not the foolishness that he might perceive to be wisdom. And that's what's essentially spelled out in both of those verses. So those are valid questions, valid concerns, but of course they are not without answers. I want us to think about what these proverbs are, and how to define them, and how to understand what we have here in this book. A proverb is very simply a short wisdom, a short wise saying, a short saying of wisdom. It's a nugget, right? I like that term. And by the way, anytime you go to a Chinese restaurant and they give you a fortune cookie, you know what's inside the little thing, whatever cookie you tear apart in the paper? It's usually a proverb of some kind, not necessarily a biblical proverb, but the fortune is usually not so much a fortune. You know, it's not telling you your future. Usually, it's a saying from a Chinese proverb, you know, something that has come, that has been passed down throughout their heritage as a saying of wisdom, you know, that if you will follow this path, you know, there is good to be gained from it. So the idea of proverbs is not unique to the Bible. Every culture would have these sayings, again, that would be passed down from generation to generation just as general points of wisdom. So that's what a proverb is, and that's what we have here in this book. The theme of Proverbs is found in the very beginning of the book. So look with me, starting in chapter 1, and the theme is made rather clear to us from the very beginning. Chapter 1 and verse 1, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king in Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence." Prudence would be like discernment, how you use wisdom in a given situation. "To give prudence to the simple, to give the young man knowledge and discretion." So the point of this book is to pass along the knowledge and wisdom and understanding and discernment that is necessary for a person as we go through life. Again, it's intended to be very practical. And you have this statement here in verse 7 that it is the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of knowledge, but it is fools who despise wisdom and instruction. Only a fool, Solomon says, would ignore the wisdom of what is being said in this book. And those who do accept it are accepting the fear of the Lord. That is the beginning of the wisdom that is in this book, the beginning of the knowledge that is in this book. And that phrase and that emphasis is seen there, especially throughout chapter 1. I've kind of highlighted there on the screen some of these other verses that it fits in. Interestingly, the exact same phrase shows up at the very end of the book. If you want to turn to the very back of Proverbs 31, and this description of this virtuous woman, one of the very last things that is said about such a woman is in verse 30. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who does what? Fears the Lord is to be praised. So at the front end, we're given this statement about it is the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of wisdom. And at the end of the book, we're given this picture of this woman who fears the Lord, and thus she is to be praised. So the fear of the Lord is, I think, the main theme in the book, and it kind of bookends the whole book. So how do we read this book? It is unusual in its contents. It's unusual in its layout and format. How do we read it? We need to understand that Proverbs is written from the perspective of a father who is passing along this wisdom, this instruction to his son. And again, I've noted a number of verses there on the screen, but we can just look at some of these in order. Look at how chapter 1 and verse 8 begins, to whom it's addressed. Solomon writes, "My son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother." Verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Chapter 2, verse 1, "My son." Chapter 3, verse 1, "My son." Chapter 3, verse 11, "My son." Verse 21, "My son." 4:10, "Hear, my son, and accept my words." Chapter 4, verse 20, "My son, be attentive to my words." Chapter 5, verse 1, "My son, be attentive to my wisdom, and incline your ear to my understanding." And a few other examples as well, down into chapter 6 and 7. So, you would almost think of this book, you could, I think, rightly think of this book as, I was going to say something like a memoir, I'm not sure that's the right word, but almost like a letter that's being written from a dad to his child, to his son. "My son, here's the wisdom that you need as you navigate life. Here's what you need to have." If you go back, for example, to chapter 1 and verse 8, and this specific statement that's there, "My son, hear the instruction of your father and do not forsake the," New King James has it as, "the law of your mother." Do not forsake your mother's teaching or instruction, other commandments, other translations have it. The word there for law is the word for Torah. Okay, and Torah would refer to the books that Moses wrote. So you could rightly, I've sometimes paraphrased that verse this way. It's like Solomon is saying, "My son, listen to your dad's instruction and read your mom's Bible." Is one way you can kind of think of what Solomon is saying here. Pick up the book that Moses wrote, that your parents have tried to guide you in, and ingest it for yourself so that it becomes the very pattern by which you live. And so throughout the sections of this book, you have these reflections on what Moses wrote. It's like Solomon is trying to put into digestible form a summary, or some of these summary statements of what Moses wrote about in the law. And so you have sometimes even very direct connections between, for example, certain of the Ten Commandments and what is given in the book of Proverbs. I won't go into some of those examples. We could get lost in them. one interesting thing you could do for a study is actually, you know, to, as you read through Proverbs one time, actually see if you can connect much of the instruction that's given there with the Ten Commandments. Like, which of the Ten Commandments, which of the categories would those instructions fall into? You could divide many of them out that way. So that, again, can be done. I won't bother to give too many examples there. Now, as far as how the book is arranged, there is a little bit of what may seem like disorganization or disunity in the book because it jumps from topic to topic so frequently. But there actually are certain headings within the book that kind of guide the way. So let me point some of these out to you, and you may want to make note of them, even if it's just in your own Bible. But you have the opening verse, which tells us, in some ways, is kind of the heading, of course, for the whole book, but I think it's also the heading for a specific section of the book. So verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And you have then, of course, the beginning of those proverbial type statements. But then, when you get to chapter 10, you see essentially the same kind of heading, the Proverbs of Solomon. And the difference between what you have in the first 9 chapters and what you have in starting in chapter 10 is that actually in the first 9 chapters, you do have longer sections that will carry on a topic for a long stretch. Okay, so for example, chapter 5. Okay, chapter 5 is almost entirely about Solomon instructing his son to avoid an adulterous woman and how to pursue wisdom instead of this other woman who would entice him in a way that he ought not go. And so you have this extended teaching in this one chapter along those same lines. And you have other chapters in that section that do similar things. Whereas starting in chapter 10, you really just have kind of these one-liners. And it would move, you know, quickly from one one-liner, you know, to another for long chapters. So these extended sections of teaching in the first 9 chapters. So they're still Proverbs, but they're sometimes grouped in larger sections, whereas the next section, starting in chapter 10, would just be these more shorter sayings. But both are headed up with that same phrase, the Proverbs of Solomon. Then, if you go to chapter 22, there's another heading that's given starting in verse 17. Solomon says, "Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise, and apply your heart to my knowledge." So it's almost like he's saying, listen up. Here are the words, not just of Solomon, but of this general group called the wise. And then down in verse 20, he even explains how it's listed out there. He says in verse 20, "Have I not written for you 30 sayings of counsel and knowledge?" And if you start in chapter 22, verse 22, and you go to about chapter 24, verse 22, you can actually break down those statements into these 30 individual sayings. So again, maybe that would be interesting for you to count them out and see if it adds up that way for you. So again, that kind of sets that section apart. And you come to the end of that section and the beginning of the next one in chapter 24, verse 23, where that verse simply says, "These also are sayings of the wise." So it's like he's drawing your attention to, okay, that was one section of these wise sayings. Here is another one. And that seems to carry us through the end of chapter 24. And then, if you look at the beginning of chapter 25, there's this other heading where we are told, these also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. So these are seeming to be further statements, further Proverbs of Solomon that were written by him, but then copied down by men during the time of King Hezekiah. And so again, it's just sort of listed off there as separate from the others. That takes us all the way through the end of chapter 29, and then at the beginning of 30, we have someone else who is introduced. Chapter 30, verse 1, is headed up by this statement, the words of Agur, the son of Jakeh, the oracle that he was given. And so you have here statements, again, these short, wise sayings, not written by Solomon, but by this other man whose words get contributed to the book. And then something similar in chapter 31. Chapter 31, again, written not by Solomon, but by King Lemuel. Where was Lemuel king of? We're not told. But apparently Solomon thought his sayings wise enough to be included in this book as well. And so that's one way that the book itself kind of arranges its material and shows these headings to sort of divide the material out. Now, I'm going to give you, within each of those headings, I'm going to give you what some have said to be like a one sentence, one statement summary of the material in those sections. So to dig much deeper, you'll have to spend some time on your own, but we'll kind of go through this content rather quickly so that you can generally understand what is in each section. So he said that chapters 1 through 9 really is one section, and the summary there is that really this is parental teaching. So again, think father to son, teachings on how to avoid wicked men and wayward women. How to not be enticed when what the wicked have to say sounds better than what the righteous have to say. How do you not fall for it? And how do you not fall when the enticements of an adulterous woman sound better than going home to the wife of your youth? That's the instructions that are given in chapters 1 through 9. And again, it's kind of contained there in more lengthy combined sections than what you have in really anywhere else in the rest of the book. So that would be... And the other thing that's interesting I'll say about that section is how wisdom and foolishness, or wisdom and folly, are personified. So Solomon will speak, for example, of lady wisdom and lady folly. And how do you listen to the voice of the right lady in that sense? So that they're spoken of not just as concepts, but as people. So it's interesting how they are personified and spoken of that way. You know, hear the voice of wisdom as though wisdom itself can speak to you, is one thing that Solomon says in that section. Starting in chapter 10, this is the kind of the biggest section of the book. And again, it really is these kind of, several of these what sound like one-off statements. I've heard it said that this section of the book of Proverbs is kind of like the Bible's Twitter account. Okay? If you ever just go through somebody's social media feed, it's very likely that one thing that they post will not at all relate to the next thing that they post. And then the thing after that, again, might be good. It might all be good. But it's not necessarily an ongoing thread, connection from one to the other. So just imagine Solomon had a Twitter account. And you click follow. And you just wanted to hear what he had to post every time he hit send, you know, on the tweet board. That's kind of how this reads. You know, what did he post this day? What did he post the next day? It's not necessarily connected to the previous day, but it's all good. And it all goes back and is a reflection of what he himself knows to be true based on the scriptures that have come before him that he has known. So I don't know if that's a helpful illustration for you, but for me, who admittedly spends too much time on Twitter, I find it helpful. So there you go. Here's a question just for our own pondering. Why do you think it's written that way? Why do you think it's written just one seemingly isolated statement after another for chapter after chapter? Any thoughts on that? Yes.
The concept of short attention spans is not new.
Okay. So just give them one thing at a time to think about, and then move on quickly to something else to think about. Okay? Very good. Anything else?
It's something that's ongoing.
Okay.
What's he going to tell us next?
Yeah. Keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Yep. Say something quickly, and then if you're going to say something else, just move on and say it quickly as well, right? Okay, good. All right. All right. Here's another thought, and I'm not saying those are wrong and mine is right. I think that's all very true. If you were simply to, over a long period of time, collect things that you wanted your children to know, do you think they would occur to you all at once? Or progressively, like, you know, here and there, just as life happens. Probably the second one, right? And all of those thoughts might be isolated and disconnected from the other thoughts, but you want to make sure that you still get the point across. So perhaps it's written again in seemingly this random and somewhat disorganized way, because Solomon is simply writing them as life happens to him and as they occur to him over a long period of time. So I think he wrote these proverbs, you know, if you're going to write 3,000 sentences about anything, 3,000 proverbs, you're probably not just going to all of a sudden have 3,000 super great things to say all at once. They're going to come to you over a long period of time. So I suspect that Solomon wrote these as life occurred to him and as this wisdom occurred to him and was given to him by God. So, you know, like if you were just to journal, but you know, in your journalings, you just, again, were writing wisdom as it came to you, you probably would not have a collection of them until you had done it for a long period of time. And then even when you put them in order, the order might not make any sense at all unless you realize that's just how they were written over the course of life. So why does it move from one subject to another? Because life every day moves from one subject to another. And so probably that's how Solomon recorded these. And so he's relating to his son the way that the world works. And then the 30 wise sayings seem to be connected with how to relate to other people. The next section of wise sayings are primarily dealing with justice and economics, particularly in the home. Chapter 25 begins with this statement. In chapter 25, verse 1, these also are the proverbs of Solomon, which men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. Verse 2, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings to search out a matter. So the glory of God and the glory of kings. How does the ultimate sovereign God of the universe handle things, and how do the kings of the earth handle things? That's kind of what's put on display there in those chapters. Chapter 30, the words of Agur, humble descriptions of the world. By the way, Agur asks this fascinating question in verse 4. Look, if you're looking at Proverbs 30, put your eyes on verse 4. Who has ascended into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fists? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? Now, if you just stop there and you're going to answer that question, what would your answer be? Who has done all this, Agur? God has. Okay, so he asks all those questions, and then at the end of the verse he says, what is his name and what is his son's name? That's an unbelievable thing that Agur would write. And he just leaves it hanging. It just sounds kind of open-ended until you get to John chapter 3. And John is writing of Jesus saying, the wind moves where it will. And no one has ascended to heaven except him who has come from below. And no one has descended to earth except him who has come from above. Let me tell you his name, and let me tell you his son's name. I just think that's remarkable the way that John shows Jesus personifying all of those things. So that's chapter 30, and then nobility and the virtuous woman summarize the words of Lemuel in chapter 31. By the way, the kind of zooming out into the whole structure of the Hebrew Bible, if you can remember. What book comes after Proverbs in the Hebrew order? Do you remember? So it goes Psalms, Job, Proverbs, and then, do you remember? Ruth. So I'm quite certain it's not an accident that whoever put those books in order saw that Proverbs ends with this description of a virtuous woman and then said, now let's put in this book that tells the story of this virtuous woman. So it's interesting how that works. Last thing I'll say, again, thank you for your patience. How do we connect Proverbs? How does Proverbs connect to the storyline, the structure, what comes before it and what comes after it? I'll just put it in a couple of statements here. Proverbs, I think, points backwards to the reliability of God's law. How is it that the law of Moses, the things written for us by Moses in God's commands there to Israel, how is it that they are at all practical? Well, that's what Proverbs is given to show us. Listen, my son, to, again, your mother's Bible, your mother's Torah, and heed its instructions for your life. Here's just how practical it is, I think is what Solomon is trying to get across. So if you look backward at what it borrows from and how it applies that to its present day, it has connections to what comes before it, and it has connections to what comes after it. Because there's one who would eventually come who perfectly fulfills that law of Moses, who perfectly personifies the wisdom of this book, and who perfectly answers Agur's question, what's his name? And what's his son's name? And Proverbs uniquely points forward to the one who embodies that and shows us that. So, hopefully that gives you some good handles on the book. And I hope it is a book that you enjoy and benefit from and return to often. Let me pray for us as we wrap up our time. So Lord, again, we give thanks for your word. We praise you for what you've shown us in it about yourself and for what we can see to be true about you, about our world, about how things have worked best from the beginning, and Lord, how you intend those things to be true for us. So give us wisdom, not just that we would know the wisdom of this book, but that we might live it out, that we indeed might be people who fear the Lord and thus have the wisdom and knowledge that we are intended to have. We give you all the glory in Jesus' name. Amen.